Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Two hearts that beat as Kenny one. Rogers?
Yes, with
Christian Yelich.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. And look, everybody, this is Ryan Kelly. Hello, Ryan.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for letting me jump on. How's your Tuesday morning shaping up?
It's lovely. What about yours?
Mine's great. Now that I know Junior's with you guys. Junior, how are you?
Jennings.
You doing all right, Ryan?
I'm doing good. I took extra good care of my feet for you this morning.
Jennings, you're not interested in the male foot.
No, not particularly male feet. No, we stick
strictly. You're already discounting them. You haven't seen them.
Yeah, that does seem unfair that you're already discounting.
You're already calling them out. But let's get moving here. I'm on my way. I'm going to see the dentist, I guess. He's a dentist of some sort. Had mouth surgery done this year. I don't know if any of you fine gentlemen have ever had the opportunity to have a nice oral surgeon stole flesh off the roof of your mouth and stitch it onto your lower gum line. But let me tell you, it's a real treat. And had that done, probably like quit chewing when I did it. So I went like 4 months ago, and pain in the butt. The only nice thing about having mouth surgery is I can't talk. My wife sure loved that. Let's leave it with this. I'll be back in the office in 30 minutes after a quick checkup and a clean bill of health. And I want to work up lungs today more than anybody else. Christmas season's here. We know what that means. Credit cards are being used. Budget is tight. It happens at my house. I see this stuff coming in every single day from my wife, ordering it on Amazon and all that. And if you're a homeowner, there's a great opportunity here. I know I said it 100 times. I'll make it 101. Cash out refinance. Now, this isn't always the best loan out there. When rates are super high and home values aren't there, cash out's a loan we don't do a lot of. But rates are really low and home values are really high. We do them all day long. So cash out refinance is as easy as a normal refinance, but we don't stop there. We also pay off all the credit cards, all that high interest debt, anything that's just kind of hovering around you, sucking all the money every month. And those are the type of loans where you're saving $500 to $1,000 a month because you get rid of all those credit card payments. And then you live this totally different lifestyle. It changes lives. Not credit card debt if you're a homeowner, or even if you're just looking to buy a house or to get pre-qual. Put the homeowner expert team to work for you. 314-781-9700. 781-9700. Always available online at thehomeloanexpert.com. Gentlemen, have a fabulous day. I hope to see you soon. And Junior, the podcast with your dad is probably my favorite one thus far, just so you know. Thanks, boys.
Ah, God
bless. You got it, brother.
Thanks.
That's a kind compliment there. Boy, Jennings, I don't know if I've gotten better feedback on a podcast than the one I did with your father, and it had absolutely nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It was the class that he exuded. Somebody noted this, and then I'm like, God, yeah, now that I think back on every question I asked him regarding his career, he would, like, thank at least one person, if not more, along the way, and then usually describe each one as a fabulous gentleman.
Dear friend. I got to tell you, and I sent you a text. I put it on the fan page.
Very kind of
you captured Jay Sr. And that is something that my kids will be able to share with their kids, and that is going to live, on the web or wherever. And it was fascinating. I loved it, and I've listened to it twice.
Oh, already. Is that right?
Yeah, because like I said, you captured so many. I mean, from sitting on FDR's lap to...
I had no idea about that when I sat down.
I mean, you know, the stuff that this guy has seen and done, whether you like him as a broadcaster or whatever, I mean, it is unique.
And he's a Forrest Gump of sportscasting.
He's seen it all and lived it all. And the bottom line is, the thing that I take away from him more than anything is that I'm somebody who might say something bad about something or somebody every couple hours. He never says anything bad about anybody. Maybe a jockey once in a while, but...
if you haven't listened to it, it's up there on the... on whether it be iTunes, Google Play. I guess 85% of, I'm learning these things as I go now, 85% of podcasts are listened to on iTunes.
Are they really?
Yeah, but people listen on Google Play and Stitcher as well. You can also listen to it on InsideSTL.com.
I'm looking forward to hearing Lux.
Lux is up. We put that up yesterday. And on her own, Jennings, apropos of nothing, I guess I asked because I know they used to have a text inbox over at Emmis, and then I think they Emmis owns 105.7, 97.1, 96.3, and Keishi. And then I think they were switching to Twitter, but I asked her, I said, do you ever get, I just assumed that she got a lot of creepy texts and tweets, and she said, it's funny that you bring that up, and then she had just gotten one the night before, and she was all excited, grabbed her phone to tell me about this, and Jay, you have to hear it. Take a listen if you would.
His email address is Tom Foot Tickler.
Oh, no. Is this Jay Randolph Jr.? This is the whole thing now. Now we have an expose.
It says, hello. As they always say, longtime listener, first-time caller. You're incredible on the air, for real. So glad to have you back. I've always enjoyed listening to you. Your laugh is infectious. So much joy. That's where things get weird. Okay. I've always wondered if you're ticklish. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Scale of 1 to 10, how ticklish are your feet? Second paragraph. Hey, 1 in 4 guys has a thing for feet. I absolutely respect you, and I'm more curious than anything else. F off, buddy, would probably be deserved, so I don't want to add to the pile of negative experiences you've had in your life, but if all willing, I'd love to hear from you. Keep rocking your airwaves and stealing our hearts.
Jennings, are you Tom the Foot Tickler?
I am not.
You're not. And that, you're not a tickler per se.
No,
I don't think.
Is there
yeah,
certain
you
things
are.
You don't know? I'm not. Is there certain things that you don't understand? I don't understand why a guy would want what enjoyment a gentleman would get from tickling a broad's feet.
Now, in fairness, the other side of it would be. Per Lux's statistics there, or maybe she went on a little later on to talk about it.
1 in 4.
1 in 4. So therefore, if that data is accurate, and I don't know who's,
I think
who's
it's
doing
a little,
the Gallup
little,
polling.
Yeah, I would say maybe 1 in... I'd say 1 in 5.
Okay,
maybe.
1 in 5. So therefore, maybe 80% of the audience listens to hashtag FFF and doesn't get it.
Right.
The only thing that I don't get is the furry community.
Right. Her
but
feet
maybe
lead to honey.
But maybe if somebody explained it to me, I'd have a better grasp on it.
I don't think you would.
I don't get it. But again, as always, to each their own.
Absolutely. Some people like something, some people like
And Producer Joe. Others. Producer Joe. It's going to be quoted like Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, I think. So she was very affable about it, and it was a very well-written email, and he was polite about the whole thing. I don't know what the goal was. I guess
either.
Maybe on the off chance that she said, yeah, I'm up for it.
I love people tickling my feet.
But Lux said there is a, I guess, a Facebook page, private Facebook page, before half the fan page tries to join it, private Facebook page for, like, female talk radio hosts and female DJs all over the country. And she loved that email from Tom the Foot Tickler that she posted it, and she said... And I think this was in the podcast, or maybe we talked about it off air. I don't remember. But she said that when she posted that, hundreds of other women said, oh, my God, I get emails and texts about my feet all the time.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, last time I saw you guys, Jay Randolph Jr. was sucking on my toes.
Right. That was not Lux, for the record. That was Kara the lesbian.
How old of a lass would Lux be, or in general?
I know she went to Parkway Central and was there like in the early 2000s, so I don't know what that would be.
Gotcha. Maybe 32, 33.
I'm class of 94, and I'm 41 bills at the University High School.
University,
that's right. That's exactly right. And I should have been class of 98 at the University of Missouri Journalism School, but as things look right
just
now,
it's
going to be an open-ended discussion. So that's up for you on podcasting like the Dickens. Still to come. You know what I found? I enjoy sitting down, and don't get me wrong, sitting down with like Mazalok and Pinkel and Danforth has been awesome, but I really like sitting down with other broadcasters. Dave Glover, who has had an incredibly successful
run. A lot of people never really understood
yeah,
him.
But he kind of does a similar thing to our thing in the morning, and he's been doing it, and as he pointed out, and I don't think he realized, he was taunting me inadvertently. In the exact same time slot, more importantly, in the exact same radio station for 18 years. I seriously think if I were to track how many stations I've been to.
Twice.
Three times. I think it would be around 7. It's like every other year.
Gigs, you know? What's your number now on stations?
God, I...
Different stations?
No, just
how many
different
times?
How many times? Yeah.
On this one?
Well, this in general. I mean, I would imagine it's got to be around 10.
Close. I mean, I've lost
digits.
Count. I really have. I'm not trying to brag that I got fired so many times.
Well, it was just management changes.
A lot of times, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, 10, 11, 12.
Well, Glover's been in the same spot, but my point is I really enjoy interviewing these broadcasters. So like Mike Bush was supposed to, the same day Lux was in, Mike Bush was going to come in, and then they wound up having like some kind of meeting at KSDK, and he's like, I don't think I would have anything more than an hour, and as it turns out, we usually go longer than an hour, and I have so much for Mike Bush, whereas yeah. With Lux, I only have like a couple things. I knew her, but I didn't really, I couldn't find anything.
Did you talk about tunes? Did you talk about the business?
A little bit, certainly the business, but that wound up being more of the kind of what you think of if you do listen to podcasts, and obviously a lot of our audience does since it's younger and they listen to our show via podcast, where you're just like BSing about a bunch of random stuff.
Gotcha.
And it was great. She's just a really cool person. I probably
she
could be more
like
descriptive, but that's what I think of when I think she's a super cool, like you'll be hard pressed to find anybody who dislikes her, whereas you'll be hard pressed to find anybody who likes me. And so it was a nice convergence. Charlie just gave a ring on that. I want that on the record. Yeah, Mike.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, No Duck Son called me last Thursday night.
Long Duck Dong.
That's
with
what I thought.
16 candles.
No, that was Doug's son, right?
Oh.
Yeah, John. He called me Thursday night.
John Vaughn.
Yeah.
Are you placing an order at the drive-thru?
Who's there with you, Mike?
I don't know. Oh. He called me Thursday night at 1:00.
And what did you guys talk about?
He said he wanted me to pick Penny better.
Where do we stand presently on the whole situation? Because I've seen a lot of different things. You've DM'd me a little bit a couple of times. Who's in the lead right now, Penny or Carla?
Penny.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, it's Penny. And she said she always loved me. She always said she loved me, so.
Well, that's a nice win. That's a big red W.
What else?
You know, she always.
What?
Yeah. Everybody want me to pick Penny better.
Why is that, you think?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Michael, would you say an outstanding job from Luke today?
Outstanding job from Luke.
I don't know.
No.
So I'm decided to pick Penny better.
You have, I mean, is this official? You're officially picking Penny.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, see, it's still
officially
you know,
right
there's
now.
A picture of Penny on the fan page. And it looked like she was with
radio executives
at the Shake Shack. I didn't know Shake Shack was doing VIP events.
I mean, and there's Tommy Eck.
Yeah, Tom Ackerman.
She overhang one of the girls with KMOX.
Yeah, there were a couple of people from KMOX, a few people from KMOX in that picture.
Yes.
Yeah, she always got hang one on the girl with KMOX.
KMOX.
What's KMOX?
That? Yeah. Her name Carrie.
Carrie Jennings. Carrie Walsh.
Carrie, the one got blonde hair.
The blonde.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anything for Doug as he gets his rectum inspected?
You know, I talked to Penny earlier.
Already?
She loved me.
It's very early.
And
right.
She said she loved me.
Huge win. And it.
All right.
Doug, colonoscopy.
Yep.
Nurse.
Ah!
All right.
Classic. Go to bed.
Classic.
Plowhawk, you had a wonderful Frank opinion.
Good job.
Okay,
that
drop.
Was good job.
I mean, the timing on that, you couldn't place it with the Shears any better than the timing on that. So speaking of KMOX, and my God, are these radio wars heated. They're a bunch of frauds. The media in this market is too soft. What a joke. It's
rights
an
holders.
Insult to the... Yeah, what else?
Rights holders.
Yep.
They don't give the real scoop.
Right. I'm the only one who will tell it like it is. They are a bunch of frauds.
Mosaic's lackeys.
Nice. Good.
Mosaic's
lackeys. I think we officially did hashtag Radio Wars talking points as we beg for attention. But Chris Raby spoke with John Carlos Stanton following the press conference.
And this is not audio that you would have heard if you listened or watched the entire press conference on MLB Network. And this is not something you would have seen on the anchor desk at the MLB Network, where Stanton stopped by. I think Buster Olney also talked with him. Raby, who again, I mean, this is a blood oath I've taken to take him out.
He's lucky to have a job
on the golf course. Yeah. And this is his exchange with John Carlos Stanton. Take a listen, if you would, please.
Was there a scenario after meeting with San Francisco and St. Louis that you would have reconsidered them or a team that wasn't on your original list?
Before initially meeting with them, yeah, because they're great people and have a great history with them. So, you know, even if they weren't ready this year, like I would have liked, I knew that they would within a few years.
But to clarify that, you mean after the meetings you knew that you weren't going to consider them, or you wanted to take time?
No, they're historic franchises, so I knew that they would figure out to have a great product on the field within a few years. But I wanted to be ready this year.
John Carlos Stanton explaining. And so what he's saying there is that, in his opinion, and the reason why he did not come to St. Louis, is he does not feel the Cardinals are ready to win
this year.
And so I asked Eric Gould about that in the 7 o'clock hour, if you were not able to listen. And he said, in his opinion, that was more about the Giants. So I just, the way he stumbled through the answer kind of was repetitive, a lot of uhs. And then if you really want to get into audio forensics, you hear a sigh from Stanton as Raby asks a follow-up, kind of like, crap, I got to go again. I think he was given talking points by his agent. And again, I could be wrong on this. This is my theory. And that was the line they were taking. So I just, again, and this is coming from, I think, I could be wrong, I don't listen to a whole lot of sports talk radio or whatever this kind of radio is that we do in the market, so maybe I'm missing obvious critics, but I think I was one of the most critical people of the 2016 and 2017 Cardinals, to the point that I was hoping that they would fall apart so they would become sellers. And even coming from that perspective, I am not of the opinion that the Cardinals are a few years away from winning a World Series. So I'm surprised to hear him say that, and I'm surprised for him when he gives that as the reason for not coming here. My point being, I think he just did not want to come here. So if we are to build off of that thesis, then the question becomes why? And if it's as simple as he did not want to live in St. Louis, then fine. If it's more than that requires a conversation inside the organization. Because when I ask that question, a lot of people go, oh, it's Mike Matheny. And it's like a default click. But my guess is most of the people who say it's Mike Matheny don't like Mike Matheny anyway. And so this is just another opportunity to say it's Mike Matheny. And I'm not saying that it's not Mike Matheny. I'm just saying that I'm not 100% sure that it is Mike Matheny. My opinion is, first off, and I believe it even more now, is that the Cardinals had something going on with Stanton. Well, let me put it this way. Something going on with the Marlins in July, and thought that they had something as close to done as it can be without it being done, and then Stanton nixed it, which is why then Craig Mish's report came out that it's the Marlins front office opinion that he would not accept a trade to St. Louis. Remember, that's where that started. That didn't pop up in November. That started in July/August. Well, why would that conversation come up? Like, how random would it be if you all of a sudden heard in July that Carlos Martinez would not accept a trade to Cincinnati? You go, well, why the hell was anybody talking about a trade to Cincinnati? And as it proved out to be, by the way, Craig Mish on Thursday night tweeted out that Stanton's four teams that he would accept a trade to are the Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs, and Astros. Before that, no one had even talked about the Yankees, Cubs, or Astros. And when you watched Stanton yesterday on the MLB Network, not at his press conference, but he was on the set with Greg Amsinger and I think Dan Plesac, he said, regarding his silence on the Yankees, he said, yeah, I was just trying to play it close to the vest, but then it got to a point where I'm like, I might have to say something. And it's my belief that, and it's, and this isn't a shot at Craig Mish at all. It's just Mish had intel on Stanton's camp. That's, to me, that's all there is to it. That's how he put his name on the map. Craig Mish, not a shot at Craig Mish. He did a great job throughout this whole thing. The percentages were amusing, especially.
And wrong.
Yes, because the Yankees were never allocated any probability. But nonetheless, he had intel on Stanton's situation and throughout just said that he just doesn't think he wants to go to the Cardinals or Giants. But back in July, said he didn't think he wanted to go to the Cardinals. And regarding yesterday, Stanton said that he was playing it close to the vest, and then it got to a point where he felt like he was going to have to put something out there. Well, Stanton didn't put anything out there, but Mish did put something out there on Thursday night, and the next thing you know, he's a Yankee on Friday.
Well, and that's... I said something to Angry before the show. Iggy, if you don't know, I call him Angry. I said, we go through weeks and weeks, and I'm listening, and I'm reading on the web, and all this about these teams and that teams, and then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, it's going to be the Yankees.
Yeah.
I mean,
he claimed it was the Yankees from the very beginning.
And that makes me start to wonder about, you know, getting fascinated or entranced by what a Craig Mish says or what a Peter Gammons or on and on and on these guys that throw stuff out. I mean, there was never anything until within 24 hours of the signing about the Yankees.
Which also says this, which is a thing that I know is super unpopular. But I still, any opportunity that I have a chance to say it, because I think it benefits the rhetoric and to be conscious of it when this next kind of scenario pops up, is that the reality is we don't know. It's not fun, and it irritates people, but the reality is that we don't know. So much so that, like I said, regarding the cat chat with Matt Holliday, and he asked him about being a broadcaster, and Holliday said, yeah, maybe the traveling, you know, isn't something you would want to do with having a young family. But the tough thing about broadcasting and then being critical is that you're critical, but the reality is you don't know unless you're in the clubhouse, which is something when I did the show with Jim Edmonds, he would say over and over again, and I know that irritated people, but it was the truth.
Even a guy that short removed and that was that good
wouldn't know. So in this case, the Cardinals certainly didn't say anything and would not say anything. That's the way the Cardinals operate. The Giants had their GM saying stuff, which I thought was super odd and kind of amateur hour. But whatever, it's what he chose to do. And then you had Stanton the whole time wanting to go to the Yankees, but it wasn't even on the radar, unless that's BS. And he couldn't say, well, I really wanted to go to the Dodgers, but then the Yankees popped up and I didn't want to live in St. Louis. And I think the Giants are stuck with some crappy contracts, so they're not close to winning. So, you know, it was going to be the Yankees. So, that the reason why I bring the, because some people are like, oh, move on from Stanton. That's fine. Move on. You're welcome to move on to 101, KMOX, whatever. But the reason why I bring up the discussion is you now have, as I brought up to Derek Gould, three straight years in which you've either lost somebody who played here, who took less money to not be here in Hayward, who had to get an extra year and therefore additional dollars to come here because he did not want to come here in Dexter Fowler. And then a player flat out say no to coming here. And that's reality. And that's not including David Price, because I believe, and I could be wrong, I believe David Price simply was blown out of the water. And therefore it's not apples to apples, blown out of the water by the Red Sox offer, which wound up being, what, $25 million, give or take, more than the Cardinals offer. So that is why I'm having the conversation, which I thought Derek Gould elaborated on when he was with us regarding it's a different program now as baseball's free agents get younger, that the idea of coming to a place where it's a, quote, great place to raise a family is not as appealing. Although I don't really think, when you look back on McGuire's trade and sign, Edmund's trade and sign, that that was a concern for those two players at that time in their lives. I don't think McGuire's son, I mean, it was a big deal when he was in town and McGuire lifted him up in 1998, but I don't think he was living here. I think he lived in LA with his mom. I think she lived in LA. That wasn't the case either for Jim in 2000. I think they just loved playing here.
Yep.
So then people go, well, Tony La Russa was here then. And so, therefore, it's Matheny. And I don't know. It could be. And the truth is, it could be a combination of things. There's this thing about Stanton wanting to party, and that's why he didn't want to come here. And I just don't think that's the case, because I just don't think a guy like John Carlos Stanton is like, oh, man, I can't wait to get to the club in the place where I play. And there's an article, and I posted it on the fan page. I think it's called Ocean Drive. It's like the Ladue News of Miami, except as opposed to having a target audience of 80-year-olds who inherited a bunch of money.
This is newer money.
this is Miami money.
About a wedding
it's
spread.
New, you know.
Pictorial.
Scarface. And they interview Stanton right after he signed the contract. You know, it's one of those Alive magazine things where you pose and you're like pondering, except, you know, you just put on an outfit from Neiman Marcus. And he's just like, yeah, I went to South Beach to celebrate after I signed the contract with my friends, but that was it. I don't like that stuff. He lives in Hollywood, even though he's only a couple minutes away from, you know, the hot spots in West Hollywood. That's just not his thing. And when he got announced that he was traded to the Yankees, he did party at a club, I think One Oak in Miami Beach on Saturday night with...
2 Chainz.
2 Chainz, that's right. And I don't think 2 Chainz hangs out at Wheelhouse, but I don't know that.
Be cool if he did.
I don't know that he doesn't, but my point is, I don't really think that was like the determining factor. What he said in the article is he loves having the option of so many different things to do, whether it's you go out in a boat, you can go west and hang out in the Everglades and go on some kind of day trip there, the restaurants, the culture, all of that. But that doesn't mean that means he's got a hankering to go out and get S-faced every night and chase women around. So I feel like that's kind of a...
Everybody's like, looking for answers, you know, like you said, tossing out the Matheny thing, and, you know, why would a guy that makes that kind of money want to live in St. Louis, Missouri? Or, I mean, you know, he got more money, it appears, or is close to, the money from the New York Yankees.
What do you mean got more money as a trade?
Well, I mean, the potential down the road. Well,
endorsement? I agree with that.
I mean, that to me.
When you're making $300 million, I just don't think that's, I don't think, as weird as it, because that's another thing. People say it's the opt-out.
Right.
And this will be better for him to have Judge in the lineup and Gregorius and Sanchez hitting behind him. For the opt out, and then what? So then he makes what, $400 million, and be like, oh sweet, now I can live in Huntley. I don't get what the
right.
Like what it does. I just don't think that's. I just think when it gets down to it, he just didn't really want to live here, and I don't think that's wrong. And there's nothing that the Cardinals can do about it because it is appealing to other players.
Sure,
but if it is a case where people who have played here or people who are playing here are saying, don't come here. That's a problem. And so in a vacuum, Stanton's saying no. It's like, oh, I get it. 27, 28 years old, grew up in L.A., has lived in Miami. He's single. This isn't the place for him. But when you go, okay, Hayward chose to leave. Fowler had to be, you know, bribed to come here. And Stanton said no. That's a problem.
That's
why I'm having the discussion. Now, yeah. I don't know what you can do to fix it. But that is
what
why
think,
I bring
Chuck?
It up.
Well, I know this is a boring answer, but I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. And look, I love St. Louis, but let's be honest. If you are a 28-year-old dude, do you want to live a single dude? Do you want to live in St. Louis or New York? I think that's a relatively easy answer. The other thing is, even though the Cardinals have the history and the championships, I think we've forgotten that, you know, the last 2 years they haven't made the postseason. This past year, they finished in third place. I mean, they finished 9 games back. And even if you're adding Giancarlo Stanton to the Cardinals, and I'll ask you this question, because we know, and Tim, you cited Vegas odds, the Yankees are now the favorites to win the World Series with Giancarlo Stanton. He's going to a lineup that already had Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Didi Gregorius. Are there similar names like that with the Cardinals when you kind of look at their lineup? And I just think if you look at the Cardinals with Giancarlo Stanton, do you think they're better than the Cubs? I think they're competing with the Cubs, and maybe you can say, all right, they're a lock to probably make a wild card. I don't think you can say they're the favorites now like the Yankees are when you add Giancarlo Stanton. So I think if he's gone through 8 years...
I think most people would have said the Yankees were the favorite at this moment last Thursday in the American League East.
But they're... Okay, but the favorite to win the World Series. I know they're
favorite to win the World Series.
With the Astros and all that. But now, and I just checked Bovada, they're the favorite to win the World Series. And I just think if you're Stanton and you have lost for 8 years and never played in a postseason game, you could come to the Cardinals and say, all right, I bet you with me we could get to a wild card, maybe beat the Cubs in the division. But if I go to the Yankees, we're probably going to run deep in the postseason.
And that's fair. Then I would point out that Craig Mish reported in July that Stanton would reject a trade to St. Louis. And at the time, the Cardinals were a game out of, you know, the National League Central lead. So I, like I said, if it's simply about not wanting to live in St. Louis, then great, case closed. And we'll never know because he's not going to say it. My question is what's this with Hayward, with Fowler?
Is there something going on?
If there's something more, and I don't know. And if not, and great. And like I said, I would be stunned. And man, well, we certainly be talking about it in depth if the Cardinals leave Orlando without a significant, with all due respect to Luke Gregerson, significant addition to the team. I'd be stunned, which is why I said when I saw that Miami writer tweet out this morning, like at 6 o'clock, the Marlins would have to look at trading Yelich if some team is willing to overpay, and that's the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals have a bullseye on their backs from any team in Major League Baseball that it is in a seller mode at the winter meetings, and they are going to overpay. I believe that the Cardinals, I don't think necessarily Mozeliak, but I'm very confident in saying Mike Matheny is not the Cardinal manager if the Cardinals have another season like 2016 and 2017. Mike Matheny will not be the manager at this time next year. So for those of you who loathe Mike Matheny, then there's your means.
Yeah, if you want
another 82-win-ish season.
If your theory is so they gotta move the in. Problem, if they don't win this year, Tim's right.
Well, my point is this, is that the Cardinals are going to be, and maybe I'll be wrong, the Cardinals are going to be way more aggressive this offseason than any offseason I can remember in the last decade.
Agreed.
They have to be.
Yep.
So therefore, they are the team that you want to do business with, because next to the Marlins, who are marks, and by marks I mean had bullseyes, and also I think, you know, I mean, I'm kind of like embarrassed for them for like trying to run that bluff.
Terrible.
It's like, oh, it's like you're sitting at a 2-5 table and a guy's shaking and you're going, oh crap, I got to take it, but you need to get up after this hand. But that, you know, we're going to make you a Marlin the next 10 years if you don't take the Cardinals or Giants. Okay. text me when you have something from Cashman.
Good luck with that.
That the Cardinals are next on the mark list. And so the Marlins are going to go, we really don't want to trade Yelich, but if you, we really don't want to trade Ozuna, but if you, we really don't want to trade Colomady, but the Cubs aren't willing to take on Longoria, but if you... And I think that's how this is going to play out, which is a dangerous spot because the Cardinals have been able to be competitive in every single season, including 07 and 08, even though those were down years since 2000, because they haven't taken on bad deals, with the exception of Tino Martinez. And that was a minor, relative to what baseball contracts are 14 years later, contract.
Boy, it was bad, though.
What's that, Tino?
Yeah,
and that was an emotional overreaction, I think, to Mark McGwire.
Yep.
And so retiring via fax a month beforehand and Tino having a great World Series. So I worry about the position the organization is in because you have players saying no, and then you also have a need to do something. And they know they have to do something. Whereas I think the Fowler thing was, oh, crap, we didn't get the guy we wanted, Adam Eaton, and now we're going to go out and get a guy that before we used to kind of think was a middle-of-the-road guy, and we're going to overpay him. And that wasn't the way that they've historically done business. And that is concerning to me. So that's my logic for getting into the weeds on the discussion. Your thoughts are welcome. 855-282-8255. 855-282-8255. Tim, are you concerned about the Cardinals' ability to land a big free agent, or will it simply have to overpay for what's out there? Well, we talked to who do you consider to be the biggest free agent? Would you say it's J.D. Martinez? I mean, who's going to get the biggest? Is it Martinez?
I would say Martinez, yes.
And Derek Gould just said the Cardinals aren't interested in J.D. Martinez. Part of that is, of course, the contract, and the other part of that is that you have an opt-out years, and the other part of that is, you know, he's going to be in the National League and you don't have the DH, although I think there's a good chance that by the time that Martinez would be a DH that the National League, unfortunately from my perspective, will have the DH. But Derek has been consistent saying the Cardinals aren't interested in J.D. Martinez, even though I see the Cardinals' name nationally attached to J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, I'm looking here, yeah.
And so I've always kind of dismissed that because I feel like Derek would know better than anybody who's riding it nationally. And sometimes these teams get attached in order to advance a narrative of an agent who's trying to create a bigger competitive pool. And then Eric Hosmer, another name that gets attached to the Cardinals. And I'm like, really? And then I just asked Eric about that. And he said, yeah, that wouldn't transform the lineup. I don't think they're really interested in Eric Hosmer, even though he thinks they're going to be sold hard on Eric Hosmer.
But would Christian Yelich transform the lineup? See, I look at both of those guys as kind of really nice players. You want them on your team, but they're not the Stanton.
I agree with you. I think the reaction of the fan base to simply Christian Yelich will be big-time disappointment. And even though I think it is wrong to chastise the Cardinals for not getting Stanton, when from my standpoint, clearly they did everything they possibly could and there was nothing that they could do about it to get him here, there are plenty of people who say, oh, there's another second place finish for John Mozeliak and Bill DeWitt. And anytime it comes up, it was a year ago today that they acquired Dexter Fowler. And I'm just like, last year, Dexter Fowler was the prize free agent. Now, it tells you a lot about the free agent class, but they overpaid Dexter Fowler. So this narrative, again, it comes from a corner of the fan base that they're cheap when they pissed money away on him.
And they're ready to do it this year.
Yeah, I'm just like, where, like, I mean,
I don't get
you're things. Welcome to the thought process, but I feel like it's kind of easily shot down. I agree on your Fowler take, Tim, but I don't think he's overpaid. I think he will be worth his contract, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was the best move for the team at the time. It's from Ballboy Bandit. All I can say is Venmo for rolls. You tell me the dollar figure, I'll cap it at a grand, and we can Venmo for rolls. We'll go to an arbitrator in 5 years and see what the arbitrator says. Was it a good deal? Venmo for rolls, Jenny.
I like that. I just think nowadays, whether it's free agency or the trade market, unless you're doing one of these deals with like a Miles Michaelis or a Tyler Chatwood, the lesser guys for a 2 or 3 year deal, or unless you're getting the guy at the end of his career, and I'm talking about a Carlos Beltran type 2 year deal for $25 million, that type. If you're going after the big fish, which is what the Cardinals are going after this offseason, you can't get that guy without overpaying. I mean, I'm talking any team. You can't sign the guy without probably, and this is any franchise, without giving a year you don't really want to give and maybe $20, $25 million total that you don't really want to give. And same this year. The Cardinals will not be able to get Colome or Archer unless they give up probably too many prospects or take on Longoria, who they like, but do they need him?
Right.
And that's going to be the case. Like, I think you're going to have the Cardinals getting some names that you like, but we're then going to have the conversations, man, did they pay too much? Did they give up too much? You know, they gave up Weaver or Reyes or whatever it is to finally get these guys.
I mean, that's the nature of getting a deal done. And really what was a domino effect move was the Nationals, talk about overpaying from a prospect standpoint. It's not like I've watched any of these guys play, but I remember the reaction of the industry was like, oh my God, I can't believe what the Nationals gave up to get Adam Eaton. And I think the Cardinals felt like, and I could be wrong, again, all of this is theory, I think the Cardinals felt like they identified a guy that the rest of baseball wasn't identifying as highly as they were, and they were going to be able to sneak him through and get him to St. Louis and solve their problems at leadoff and solve their problems in the outfield, and that was going to be it. And then all of a sudden, they saw the market shift, and then there was the overreaction, similar to the Maguire-Tino thing. Now you had the Eaton-Fowler thing. And so that, I think, was the beginning of the wake-up call for the Cardinals. So yes, I agree with you 100%. They will have to overpay. The difference is, while the other 29 teams have to overpay as well, in this case, everybody down in Orlando knows the Cardinals absolutely have to overpay. Your thoughts are welcome. 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. If Colome, Archer, and Longoria come to St. Louis, is it a successful offseason? That's from the land of midgets.
I would feel pretty good about that. Are they better than the Cubs? I think they're close. But if you add that with Michaelis, and I'm not saying Gregerson's anything special, but you do need bullpen arms. If you've added an all-star closer who led the league in saves, a solid number two starter-ish in Chris Archer, and a solid piece of the lineup, I would still want one more offensive piece, but I would be okay with that. And then let's see what happens at the trading deadline and potentially add another bat.
If you add in, see, I'm more intrigued by Ozuna, but I understand why the Cardinals are more intrigued, if they are. I understand if the Cardinals are more intrigued by Yelich, more years of control, 5 years as opposed to two, and they're just on a quest for a left-handed bat. But I'm more intrigued by Ozuna. But maybe I'm doing some short attention span theater, because is it realistic for Ozuna to hit more than 37 home runs in 2018-19 like he did in 2017 in Miami, which, as I would imagine most of the people listening know, is not exactly the most hitter-friendly park. By the way, Giancarlo Stanton will be hitting in, I would imagine, what has to be by far the most hitter-friendly division. I mean, what ballpark is tough to poke out in the American League East? Obviously, Yankee Stadium. You have a nice big wall in right. Boston, Camden Yards.
Yep.
My God. Balls fly out of Toronto now. And Tampa, I didn't realize that Tampa was considered a hitter-friendly ballpark, but it's considered a hitter-friendly park. So, I mean, that's just going to be a rake festival in New York. And I do, and as some people are pissed about it, I think I do like having an enemy in the game. You know, I like that the Yankees are back to evil empire mode. The thing is that, I mean, you won't find anybody who's played with Judge who says he's a bad guy. Like, if anything, the thing they keep saying, he's just like the, like Holiday. You heard him talk about that on the Cat Chat, just like the best kid, as he called him, and just couldn't be more humble. And I'm sure plenty of people in St. Louis don't like Stanton right now, but I don't think you're going to hear too many people say he's like a dick or anything like that around baseball. So it's not like you have, you know, guys you go, F that guy. You know, at the same time, when you look at the, what they call him in New York, the Core Four?
Core Four.
Jeter, Posada.
Mariano.
Mariano, is it Bernie Williams? So you remember the Core Four?
Bernie Williams.
Yeah, he should be.
Yeah, that sounds right. Pettit, maybe?
Yeah. The point being that none of those guys are real. What's your fascination with Colum A? His peripheral stats are decent, but he doesn't scream lockdown closer. Well, it's not necessarily anybody on this dais's fascination. It's who the Cardinals are pursuing, though. I mean, if they go, I mean, if put it this way, if they come back to St. Louis with only Luke Gregerson,
wow,
we might have to come in on Friday because we have a TMA Live presented by Bud Select, the official beer of the Ryan Kelly Morning After at Hot Shots on Manchester on Thursday night. We might have to do an emergency presentation.
There'll be people
on Friday.
Just going
nuts. I just can't imagine. But everybody's knocking on the Marlins' door for players the Cardinals are interested in, Ozuna and Yelich. And it's not like the Cardinals are the only one pursuing the Rays players. So it might happen. Oh, my God.
That's what I think is fascinating when you think about the Rays players, because we've heard that the Cubs are also interested in Colum A and Archer. Obviously, they have Chris Bryant, so they don't really want Evan Longoria.
Right.
But isn't it clear to you guys that, especially this year, and John Mozeliak has said it, he's very cognizant of this whole finishing second and the unrest in the fan base.
Sure.
And can you just imagine, let's say it comes down to the two best suitors for a Colum A Archer deal are the Cardinals and the Cubs. And just imagine the perception if the Cardinals lost again in a trade and they lost to the rival, the Cubs, in their own division. That's a spot where, I mean, there's leverage there where the Cardinals would probably give up way too much to not have another loss. And it would be a loss to the Cubs, their division rival. They finished already 9 games back.
Yeah. I mean, what a unique time. And I remember, and this goes back 6 years, and I feel like he was going to write in depth. And I don't know if he was going to write a book. I don't know what it was. But, you know, we talk about 2011, last time the Cardinals won a World Series. But keep in mind, if you can, that in the first week of September, the Cardinals were not even within shouting distance of a playoff spot, which would have meant at that point you would have had to go back to 2006 and Brandon Inge striking out to find the last time the Cardinals won a postseason game. In other words, what Strauss's position was that the organization was on the verge of a major turnover. Perhaps he knew about La Russa leaving. The public didn't. He suspected that Pujols would be leaving. Of course, that wound up happening. But perhaps there were going to be bigger shakeups. And instead, the team goes on that sick run, and the Cardinals, of course, win the World Series, and then that propels them into what happened in 2012, which should have been another World Series appearance, depending on your perspective. I guess if you only focus on the NLCS, it should have been, but if you focus on the NLDS, they're lucky that they got to the NLCS and that comeback against the Nationals. The point being, they then went on a run that, had that not happened in 2011, you may have seen major shakeups. it was a fork in the road for the organization. I am telling you that this week is a fork in the road for the organization. It is a definitive moment for the organization. Your thoughts, 855-282-8255. Mike Francesa is still not sold on the Stanton trade, though, Jay.
I know he was very I heard yesterday on my way to work he did not like the deal last week leading into it.
Here.
The Yankees, with this chance that they had to take it.
Teams that win have balance. This team needs better balance. It's got a ton of power. It already had a ton of power. Now it's got more than a ton of power. Now it has an incredible, incredible amount of power. But it already had a lot of power. It went from having a lot of power to having an outrageous amount of power.
That's bad.
He doesn't want too much power. Well, do we know what his last program
Friday.
Is? Okay.
Did anybody listen to Richard Deitch's podcast with Francesa? It's really good.
Is it?
And he's clearly a really, really intelligent guy, which then makes me think some of this is a level, i.e. performance art. Because here he kind of prod Joes it or Buck Swopes it, depending on your viewpoint, where he intros the guest but then talks for
Mark DeRosa, you can watch Mark on MLB Tonight all week long from Orlando and the MLB Network. In-depth commentary and a documentary coming up on Billy. Well, that should be interesting, on Billy Martin this Thursday at 8 o'clock. DeRosa, you're not old enough to remember Billy Martin. I'm going to have to tell you about him. You're not. I mean, I could tell you 100 Billy stories. You know, Billy, there's nobody even close to like what Billy was now. Matter of fact, the stuff Luke he Pinella? Does, no one even, not even a shadow of what he was like.
Really?
Yes. Okay. There was only one. Can you imagine a guy where the manager was more popular than any of the players? That's how it was sometimes with Billy. Where he would come out of the dugout and get a standing ovation. It was crazy. I mean, it was, and you know, he was a two-fisted drinker, and you know, all the, and a fighter and everything else. And, you know, when he was part of the, you know, the old Yankees, and he was clutch, and Mickey was his buddy, and the whole, you know, all that stuff. I can't wait. It's probably fascinating. I tell you, you could do 10 documentaries on Billy Martin. That's how crazy he was. He was interesting too. And he knew how to manage. Until the end, he really was a heck of a manager.
Thanks Jesus. For being with us, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, Mark. You can see Mark on the MLB Network. Jennings 590, The Fan, and Bud Light present the 2017 Bragging Rights Papa Shot Tournament on Thursday, December 21st at Wheelhouse in downtown St. Louis. From 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., there will be four Papa Shot tournaments that you can participate in to win a pair of tickets to the Bragging Rights game. Compete in the TMA bracket from 7 to 10 or stop by throughout the day for the press box, midday grind, and hardline portions of play with a pair of tickets up for grabs during each show. Each contestant plays three rounds of Papa Shot, and the highest average of scores during each radio show wins. All told, that's four pairs of tickets to the Bragging Rights game that will be awarded at Wheelhouse Downtown on Thursday, December 21st. Papa Shot will be free to play, so come enjoy an ice-cold Bud Light and score your Bragging Rights tickets on December 21st at Wheelhouse. Charlie, are you excited for Bragging Rights?
I am excited for Bragging Rights.
I had a feeling you would be.
You're wondering, though, at this point, if Mizzou's just going to, I don't want to say blow him out of the water, but Mizzou's looking pretty good.
Looking real good.
No.
It's a shame that they didn't close that one out against West Virginia.
Yeah.
It'd certainly be top 25.
I mean, yeah,
huge lead.
Yep.
Yeah, huge lead and late. And West Virginia, I still think, they're in the top 15, if I'm not mistaken.
I think last time I saw, they were maybe 10th.
Yeah.
Now maybe that's changed.
And Missouri had that
poll.
One. Sans Porter. Illinois lost, was it Friday night or Saturday night, to UNLV in Las Vegas. Blues in action this evening against the Ning. And some bad news regarding the Blues you were showing me is we had Derek Gould on the program.
Yeah, again.
Yeah, Alex Pietrangelo placed on IR, lower body injury. Jordan Schmaltz recalled. So now you have Schwartzy and Petro both on IR.
That is rough. And this is a game tonight where it's NBC game. You're kind of like, oh, you know, in the back of your mind, if the Blues can run, you know, the Ninger always there, it seems. But unfortunately now, no Schwartz, no Pietrangelo. And the Blues are dealing with major injuries. Of course, when the season started, sitting here talking it over with Chase, he was stunned by the way they got out of the gate because of injuries. Those were more quantity. These, unfortunately, are more quality when you're talking about Schwartz and Pietrangelo. So the Blues will go up against the Ning tonight without Schwartz and Petrangelo. Also, some news that I was curious what everybody's reaction would be is this. The Cardinals have taken out a few hundred seats in right field so as to create a party porch, similar to what they have at Coors Field. And I guess that Derek's article made reference to Petco, although usually light attendance if you're in the San Diego area. But they want to create a party porch, and I think it's in right field is where it's going to be. Charlie, what do you think about the party? Would you like a party porch?
Do you like party porches, Charlie?
I just wish Stan would have known about this because he parties so much. He probably would have come here now. Party porch, I'm all for it. I'm sure it's a new revenue stream, something different. I'm all for trying new things.
I only went to a couple of games this year, but I went to the last game of the season, and I took time to look out, and all of the sponsors and the signs and everything is sponsored. And I understand that's where we're at, and that's how it has to be done. So, yeah, I understand they'll sell the porch to somebody, and, you know, as long as it's not too hokey.
It's a good locale for me, and I think for you as well as the smoker right field. I would love to see a slide on the back of the patio porch, right to the smoker's lounge. Right in between.
You would go down a slide to go smoke your darts.
I would pay an extra fee to be able to go to the party porch instead of walking down the concourse through the gates.
Where do I go?
Down a slide. I think that they should implement that. It'd be
slide
a huge
to the
thing.
Smoking lounge.
Slide to the smoking lounge. That's what you're looking for. I like it. I'm surprised they're taking out seats, but there's no other way to do it without taking out seats.
Yeah, there's got to be a way that, you know, they're going to monetize that in a big way, I've got to believe.
So that will be a new feature for 2018 as the Cardinals are creating a party porch in right field. Most of the response I've seen so far online, people are excited about it. I figured they would be.
Could be a fan page night at the party.
Wow. Had a new female pop up on the fan page.
Yes, I
noticed. And you noticed that, I see.
Yes, I did notice that, and I tried to do a little research, and I believe she's real. We've been fooled before on the fan page.
We have, with Harvard grads.
Yes, but I was taken aback, and I had four mutual friends with her, so I felt pretty good.
Hello, I'm leaving.
Right. Is that Lana? Blair Williams?
No, that was T-Fakes, one of his hoes
Blair
that Williams. He brought over.
Layers bananas.
The Coors Field party porch is legit. 30 beers on tap, and they're $5 a pop. Doubt Bush will be that cheap, but it'd be cool. Thanks. That's from the Ball Boy Bandit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, when they go to games, they're not just there to sit and watch nine innings of baseball from their seat. And it seems like there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of different things going on now at ball games. So why not? Maybe it'll be a fun spot.
Yeah, pony up. Pony up if you would. Salt and Smoke's the official brisket of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I still haven't been to the Hampton location. I feel like I got to get there. I saw Tom from Salt and Smoke posted a picture, and he was at the Shake Shack VIP opening. This Shake Shack VIP opening.
Where was our invite? We got
I
nothing.
I know.
Guess it was a KMLX deal.
I guess so. Jennings, have you had Shake Shack before?
I have never Shake Shacked.
Has anybody had Shake Shack in here? Charlie, I feel like you have a chance.
I have not.
I mean, the way these people talk about it.
Did you see the line, the video of the line yesterday?
It's
freezing.
It's a cheeseburger or a hamburger.
It's pretty tight, though, I got to tell you.
I'll go to the Villaggio and not wait.
I still haven't had the Village's Burger, and I live 5 minutes from there, so I have no excuse for that. But I got to tell you, that Shake Shack, I think if I were ranking burgers, I think it is
the best.
Have you
been to the one in New York?
New York and Miami.
Oh, really?
I actually had it Postmates to my hotel in downtown Miami from, like, I don't know
very
how Miami
nice.
geography you are, but the University of Miami is south.
Coral Gables.
And that's where the Shake Shack was, and I had it Postmates to my hotel in Brickell, which is downtown.
It cost you $27?
The over.
$27.
Just for the
ship
delivery?
Ship the over. Yeah, I mean, wow. we were hungover from the night before.
Just get me the
and
Shake
And just like,
shake.
I'm not leaving the room. I think I got 500 drafting teams. Crinkle cut, baby.
Well, sure,
I guess I'd go In-N-Out, Steak and Shake, Five Guys. The French fries are tough to beat, really, at all of them.
Disagree on the In-N-Out fries, respectfully. Where's Coach Leach? Is he and Greg Schiano going to do a podcast or something?
Where is Leach?
Did he stay at Washington State?
For the moment, right?
Yeah. So are all the coaching spots filled?
Oh, thank you.
Sonny Dykes went to SMU, I think, with the last one and the most recent one.
Who'd A&M get?
Now, is Oregon back open?
Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
No, Oregon.
I know.
No, they signed
the... I'm handling a press conference barrage of questions here.
No, the players had a players-only meeting. And the Oregon coach was, I think, a defensive coordinator or a special team guy, and the players voted for him to be the head coach. The AD listened, and I think that was that's the new Oregon coach. I don't know his name, but he was affiliated with the program previously.
Did you? Was it on the fan page, or maybe it wasn't? Somebody posted about the guy at Mizzou that got the assistant coaching job.
UCF, Ellerbe.
And that, right? the players were laughing.
Something happened there where Barry Odom was supportive of Heupel getting the job at UCF, but he was really pissed off at Ellerbe. Am I correct on the name here, Glenn Ellerbe?
Yeah, I think that's right.
For taking, he said, the way he handled it. He was the way to handle these things, and he didn't handle it right. And he was pissed.
Gotta give the Tigers some credit, because, boys, I went to that South Carolina game, and it looked like they couldn't beat Webster.
Well, then that was Purdue before? Purdue was before. Either way, Auburn was the moment. Well, regarding Missouri, I would expect... What's the number? Anybody have the spread, Charlie? I feel like you might have the spread on Missouri-Texas. I would imagine Missouri's the favorite.
I thought I saw them as like a 2.5 or 3 point favorite initially.
I would guess 2.5 points. That would be my guess. Missouri minus 2.5 would be my guess. My point being... Part of the way, because, I mean, I'll be betting on bowl games, and I know nothing
about
these.
Missouri minus 3 currently on Oddshark.
Yeah.
And you try to handicap who gives a damn. You know, but sometimes who gives a damn doesn't matter. Like Western Michigan gave a damn last year. Who'd Western Michigan get shipped by? Remember? Did your Buckeyes get in there? No, your Buckeyes got shipped by Clemson.
Yes, they did.
Buckeyes can't get in.
I was there. Man, I forget, honestly. Western Michigan...
My point is,
PJ
even though
Fleck,
obviously Western Michigan's super motivated, but you can't overcome a talent disparity. In this case, I'd just be very surprised if Missouri lost to Texas. My point being, even if they did lose to Texas, it's not a referendum on the season.
No.
Bowls. But for those who are like, wow, credit to Barry Odom for turning it around, I still have to present what I think is just, because it's such a statistical outlier, I can't imagine... And I might have to put Nick Yale on this one. I might have to do it. I don't want to do it because it's going to be such brutal, tedious work. But I can't imagine I don't even know when you would go back to, but for sure, let's just say the last 20 years, because that can resonate with just about everybody in the audience, that Missouri had a run of worse opponents in a six-game stretch than they did to finish off the season. And so therefore... For many people who did a 180 on Barry Odom based on the way the team finished the season, are you prepared to do a 180 when you have the run of at Purdue, which shouldn't be a problem, but maybe a problem, at Purdue, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Memphis, and I feel like I'm missing another one that starts in mid-September and then goes to late October, because that... All six of those will be more difficult than any of the six that led to the six-game winning streak. And the thing that I will say that you have to credit Missouri and Odom for is it would have been incredibly easy for the team to pack it in and get their asses beat by teams like Idaho and UConn and Florida and Tennessee and Vanderbilt and Arkansas based on the way things had gone against South Carolina, Purdue, and Auburn. And they didn't. And not only did they beat those teams, they beat the hell out of almost all of them. So that, to me, you have to give credit for. But I think the perception of Missouri making great progress is really just, you know,
you may
respectfully,
want to temper it.
It's inaccurate based on who they played and the fact that all those teams were either horrible
or they were packing it in. September 15th at Purdue, September 22nd, here come the Bulldogs from Georgia. Then you go to South Carolina, to Alabama, Memphis at home, Kentucky at home, at Florida.
Right.
I mean, that's...
And so I look at that, and of course you don't... I mean, first off, you don't know who the quarterback's going to be. If Drew Lock's back, your perspective changes. If they get the offensive coordinator they want, your perspective changes. But, you know, I mean, I'm looking at that list, and did you name 7 games or 8 games there?
6.
I thought it was 7-game run. Okay, 6 games.
Well, and I didn't mention... I'll look. I mean, I just switched to
Let me just text Bill real quick.
You know, they also play Wyoming at home, and Wyoming was, I mean, they were 7-5. They're probably not that good, but, I mean, they're still a college football program.
So the point being is, I hope, I mean, God, like I said, you give me an option on anything that could happen in the world of the St. Louis area sports, and it would be Missouri winning a college football national championship. That would be my play. But, which, like, 10 years ago, it was realistic, 12 years ago, with like a punchline. But that would be the best, as somebody who went to school there and just loving college football. And now it's actually, they've essentially been in semifinals for that in 2007 and 2013. I just think that it's an kind of an odd discussion with how much the perspective has changed without contextualizing it properly with what I think was a historic stretch of six horrible opponents in a row. The only way it would be different is if they had the textbook four non-conference jokes in September. And then, like, they played like KU and Iowa State. Otherwise, I can't imagine that there was a run of six opponents this bad. And all we have to do is use objective data, which would be records that they've experienced in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I'm very happy for Barry Odom that he did have this turnaround. But it does feel a little bit like the 2017 Cardinals, where if they won 7 out of 8 versus the Marlins and Braves, oh, they're a contender. Where, look, Barry Odom, he deserves another year. It was a bad schedule. However, the first half of the schedule, they looked horrible. Oh. So they did improve. The offense looked fantastic.
And I included the Missouri State game in there. That was like, oh, my God, what the hell happened?
What's going on?
Right.
So, absolutely, Barry Odom deserves another year. But I do think we should probably pump the brakes on if he's going to be here for 10 years and be the next Gary Pinkel. Let's just see how things play out next season.
Because of that stretch with Purdue, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, Memphis, Kentucky, and Florida. I mean, if they win 4 of those games, I sit there and go, oh, that's not terrible. But if they go 2-5, which is in the range of outcomes, I think people would be going bat crap and saying, God, we're all the people who wanted Odom back in 2017, even though the problem, the person asking it was probably one of the people who wanted Odom back in 2017. I wanted Odom back because I don't like seeing coaches get whacked after just 2 seasons.
It starts a trend. I mean, it's hard to build anything.
I think, what was the number? 27 SEC hires since 2007. I think that was the number. 27 coaching. And that's because you have all these unrealistic expectations. All right, we got a break. Larry Nichols will be with us at 9:15. Hot Shots email of the day at 9:45. If you missed Derek Gould, the 7 o'clock hour, I would recommend podcasting that. Subscribe to the TMA podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. You can listen on InsideSTL.com. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning After.